My guests this evening are Sarah Wan, California Coastal Commissioner, and Judith Vidiver, Chair of the Ocean Protection Coalition. Sarah Wan has a B.S. in Biology from Vassar College, an M.S. in Zoology from Yale University, and an M.S. in Electrical Engineering from UC Irvine. She was appointed in 1996 to serve on the California Coastal Commission by then Bill Lockyer, and reappointed by Senate President Pro Tems John Burton and Don Peralta. She now serves as Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg's appointment to the commission. She is currently the longest-serving commissioner on the commission and has the highest pro-conservation vote. Mrs. Wan served as chair of the Coastal Commission from March of 1999 to December of 2002. She has served on the State Coastal Conservancy Board 1999-2002 and currently is the commission's representative to the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission and the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. During her tenure on the commission, Mrs. Wan has played a critical role in many important issues, particularly public access, wetland and habitat protection, protection of marine mammals and birds. Sarah Wan was appointed to the Federal Advisory Committee to the Marine Mammal Commission on the Effects of Sound on Marine Mammals in 2004. Where she represented the state of California and was the only state representative on this committee. Mrs. Wan was appointed because she is considered an expert in this arena and was able to bring her biology, engineering, and public policy experience to the committee, which was charged with making a report to the Congress on this issue. On April 15th of this year, the U.S. announced that it was leading an effort to broker an agreement that would allow commercial hunting of whales for the first time since a moratorium was enacted in 1986. This proposal would legalize commercial whaling and would leave enforcement of quotas to the same nations that have been in violation of the current moratorium, Japan, Iceland, and Norway, and allow the killing of whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. What could have prompted Obama to move in the direction of resuming the barbaric and utterly inhumane practice of killing by spearing our beautiful and most ancient, highly evolved sea creatures? These remarkable creatures who have been on Earth much longer than we have, who play and love their babies and protect them, and often reach out to humans for contact in spite of all that we have done to them. There are many stories of such contact floating around the internet. Sarah is calling on the 15 counties of California that border the ocean to hold simultaneous demonstrations on May 23rd to protest the International Whaling Commission's proposal to remove the current moratorium. She says, "We will be joining hands along the ocean, gathering signatures on a petition to the president, asking him to keep his promise to oppose whaling and to direct the U.S. delegation to the IWC to support the continuation of the moratorium." Welcome to Women's Voices, Sarah Wan.
Thank you.
So nice to have you here. And now that we have you on the line, I'm going to introduce Judy Vidiver, who is here in the studio with me. Judy Vidiver, a certified naturalist, has been active in local and national coastal issues since 1987. After her participation in the legendary oil protest of 1988, she was hired by the local Sierra Club to produce and screen Only One Ocean, a documentary about the importance of the ocean to all life, the threats it faced, and how to protect and restore the ocean by making it an ocean sanctuary. Locally, she has helped defeat major coastal development proposals, such as the one at Belinda Point, and as chair of Friends of the 10 Mile, the 10 Mile River Estuary, More recently, she was active in defeating a proposal for a resort at the Old Orca Inn south of Westport. Judy is a 40-year resident of the 10-mile River Valley. Hello, Judy.
Hi there. Thanks for having me, Jeannie.
Yes, wonderful to have you here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Okay, Sarah, we're back to you. And you know that first question I ask my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, is what part did your mother play, or how did she influence you to become the woman that you are today?
Well, my mother influenced me in many different ways. My mother was born at the turn of the 20th century, about 1904. For those of you who don't know me, I'm 71, so I'm a little bit older than most others.
And well, not all of us.
Not all of you, but in context yes. of the fact that she was born at a time when women didn't have the rights and the ambitions and the attitudes that we currently have. And my mother was a very independent in her way woman. She actually wasn't born in this country. She came here when she was a young child. But in spite of everything, she went to what was then called Teachers College and became a teacher. So she was college educated on her own in spite of receiving no help in that regard from her family. So that served certainly as a role model for a woman to be independent and determined and in many ways the kind of person that I think I am. But I also learned what not to do from my mother, because my mother and we had an interesting relationship. My mother resented the way she was treated as a woman and lashed out in negative ways. And instead of going and actually doing what she felt needed to be done. And I learned that that's not the way to proceed, that you need to do what you think is right, and you need to be able to work with others, and there is no need for the kind of unhappiness that she faced because of her role as a woman. And I think she taught me how to be successful as a woman.
Well, it's wonderful. It's amazing how we are influenced. We learn from either their model or the opposite of what they model. I mean, it makes an impact.
And I think in my case, it was both. It was a combination of it.
Uh-huh.
And as I've grown older, I really appreciate the positive aspects of it and the fact that she did what she did and that she instilled in me the drive to do what it is I really want to do in life.
That's an amazing gift, absolutely. So you've been on the path of protecting nature and sea creatures for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that come about?
Well, interestingly enough, I started out as a scientist, and I went to college as a scientist in the early years as a biologist. But I looked at nature as a scientist, and scientists are not necessarily enviros. They look at it from the perspective of wanting to find out what makes it tick and not necessarily caring about it per se. And then I met my husband, and when we were married, and he actually had the philosophical underpinnings of understanding and loving nature and appreciating it for what it was, and for its own intrinsic value and the beauty and the enjoyment and of it and of enjoying and appreciating that other creatures have the right to enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness just as humans. And he actually gave me the philosophical underpinnings that made me into an enviro.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And you've worked together, it sounds like, through the years.
Yes, we have. We've been married almost 50 years now.
Isn't that amazing? Well, that's wonderful. We're all the better for it, too. I don't know. I'm picking up some sound there. Perhaps you're breathing on your phone. Maybe if you could kind of...
No, there is some static.
Is that it?
Yeah,
yes.
And I don't know why there's static on the line. You want me to try another phone?
No, it's not that bad. It just kind of comes and goes. Well, I want to get into what that proposal is that he's doing and why you think he might be doing it. Why do you think Obama is doing this?
You know, I'm not really sure why he would be doing it and how much of it has really gotten up directly to him. You know, there are layers and layers between the president and the people who are making these kinds of decisions. So I think you need to be looking more at who in the administration is making these decisions, and I'm not privy to that. I just know that this is coming from the administration, not necessarily directly from him, but of course in the end he bears the responsibility for the decision. And those of us who care about these wonderful creatures are very disturbed by this. We should not be taking a step backwards. We should be doing everything we can to strengthen the current moratorium, which the IWC, that's the International Whaling Commission, has really failed miserably in actually upholding what is out there. And so we should be seeking to strengthen it and not to try to dismantle it.
Well, that's absolutely true. And obviously, if people, more and more people do stand up and say no, he surely will hear what's going on.
Well, that's what we're hoping, is that we can somehow get his attention and that he will understand that the people of this nation, and I really do believe this, by and large, would not want to see this happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they would either. Absolutely not. By the way, I want to interrupt and say that it's 7:16 and you're listening to KZYX, Women's Voices. This is Janie Reasoner. I'm here with my guest, Sarah Wan, who is the California Coastal Commissioner, and Judy Vitiver, who is the chair of the Ocean Protection Commission, right?
Coalition.
Thank you. You can be on air. So, and about 20 of we will open up the phone lines, so I hope people will want to call in.
Before you do, let me express publicly my thanks to Judy for taking on the task of organizing and doing the work necessary to get the demonstration in Mendocino underway.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for making it possible by jump-starting us all and making us aware of this very scary proposal and coordinating all, is it 14 or 15 counties?
15.
15 counties. You got everybody on board.
I got everybody on board.
All right. Good for you.
Well, when I heard about it, I started to cry, and I felt I had to do something. So this is what has happened.
Right.
What are other people, are you, so you have all 15 counties,
mm-hmm.
and they're all doing something, and they're
mm-hmm.
all outraged and all of that?
Well, it's to some extent, some are, you know, some have put together bigger events than others. You know how it is with volunteers and no budget for all of this. But I think up and down the coast, things are coming together. People have gotten speakers. Oh, that's my dog.
Right.
Just a second. People have gotten speakers together. People are doing various things in San Luis Obispo. They have had children coming up. They've been preparing for this and had tables at Earth Day, and they've had children doing drawings on postcards to send to the president. And different people are doing different things in the various areas. But I think I am so appreciative of all of the people who have helped put this together. And everybody is a volunteer, and everybody is doing this because of their love for the whales.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. I want to get this in someplace. I have a vision. Wouldn't it be wonderful if all the women in the world protested against whaling?
Oh, yes. It certainly would be.
They could line up along all the oceans, shores of the oceans, joining hands and saying no more to killing.
Well, I'm not sure we would get them from every nation, but we certainly could get them in this nation and a lot of other nations.
Yes, I wonder how we could make a call to other countries to do similar things.
Well, there are some 40 environmental groups that work on whaling issues who are from all over the world who actually are united in opposing this, and they have been doing things in other nations. I am not fully up on everything that is being done, but there are groups throughout the world who are working this in Australia, in Germany, in various places throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news. Could you talk more about whaling and, you know, how there are those three countries who have continued to go ahead and whale, even though the rest of the world has said no?
Well, they're the three that, who, in one way or another, have basically defied the IWC's moratorium. It isn't that there aren't some other nations who would like to whale, and if this proposal goes through, which is just to allow Japan, Iceland, and Norway to whale, there are going to be other nations who are going to equally demand it, like Korea, for example, the right to do it. So it's not going to stop with these three. But the IWC is an international organization. It's voluntary, so it doesn't have any weight of law, and it's been rather dysfunctional in its ability to enforce the current moratorium. And it has Japan, for example, has not only done some illegal commercial whaling, but it's done a lot of its whaling through what's called scientific whaling, which the IWC permits. But scientific whaling is not really scientific whaling. You do not need to kill literally thousands of whales in order to do scientific studies on them. And in fact, I don't believe there's one single paper, research paper, that has ever come out of their scientific whaling. So clearly it's not for that purpose. It's way around the whaling moratorium. Right. And Norway simply just refused to abide by it, period. And they go about, all three nations, they not only whale, they whale they kill in endangered species, for example, sei whales and fin whales. And it's really very troubling. I have some of the statistics that, according to the IWC itself, a total of 41,453 whales have been killed between 1986, when the moratorium was established, and 2009. And that's probably a gross underestimate.
Sarah, I have a question for you, and that is, how did the first moratorium come about?
Well, there was a lot of international pressure to do this, actually, from nations like the United States. And finally, the International Whaling Commission was able to put through this moratorium, which was presumably imposed so that they could do some real studies to find out just how many whales there are and what kinds of quotas on whaling could be established that would at least not endanger the existence of various populations of whales. It was a long, hard struggle, and it was one of the major victories of the environmental movement, which we're now seeing undermined.
Well, yes, it seems horrible. I mean, I can't imagine any thinking, conscious people, you know, how can they just disregard the life in such a way?
Well, I don't think you really want me to say some of the things that I'm thinking when
go
I think
right
about
ahead.
It. No, that's okay. I think it doesn't need to be expressed. I think everybody understands it.
Yes, it's just horrifying. It really is. And then they talk about the business of quotas.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'll let you talk, but of course, quotas implies that a certain number of whales could be killed.
Mm-hmm.
I say no whales shall be killed.
Well, that's what I think, too. I don't believe that. I think that's what I meant by saying you don't end the commercial whaling moratorium. You strengthen the moratorium so that we don't have any killing of whales. But you're right. Quotas means that it's legal to take a certain amount of whales. How you enforce it once you allow commercial whaling, how you enforce those quotas, from an organization that is voluntary and has no mechanism for enforcement and has no way and has no funds to be able to deal with this, it's ludicrous. You wind up with open season on whales. You have to remember that the IWC was formed as the International Whaling Commission for the purpose of regulating and working with the whaling industry and has viewed, initially at least, whales in the same terms as we have as fishing, and putting fishing quotas on and controlling fishing to protect the fishing industry. But whales are not fish.
And right, it seems like since 1986, when the moratorium was instituted, that we've come to understand whales in a whole new light. I know that just last winter, I was down in Baja California at the calving and nursery seas down there, and if people haven't experienced a mother whale bringing her baby over to the boat, that at one time a boat could have been a whaling boat that was set out to kill her and her child, and to have this whale come and bring her baby and lift it up so that we could meet the baby and admire it and pet it and kiss it and snuggle with it, and to think that that mother and that child might be prey to some company that wants to put sushi on the table is pretty shocking to me. And I think that the consciousness that has come about in our understanding of whales, and also the plight of whales, that these magnificent, sentient, nurturing beings, they have so much to teach us about how to live in harmony with the environment and with each other, and how to forgive, even, because at one time whales did ram whaling boats, and they did upend the whalers, and they did have a rather oppositional relationship with human beings, but they've forgiven us. And I wonder what now, how can we, now that they trust us, how can we betray them and make open season again on whales?
And Judy, I'm so glad you brought up San Ignacio Lagoon. I've been there repeatedly, and anybody who hasn't been there really needs to go and experience what it means to communicate and make contact with another species. There is nothing quite like it when those whales come up and they look at you in the eye and they bring their babies over, and you know there's a form of sort of communication between two species, and it is such loving and it's so fantastic an experience that I think it's something that anybody who cares should really one day try.
Well, that's what brings me to want to save the whales, and unfortunately it's again, how many times do we have to save them again? But yet, like you say, we haven't really ever saved them. So I'm hoping that somehow, that number one, we can get the United States to not sign on to this proposal to resume commercial whaling, and number two, that we can find the mechanisms to actually stop the whaling. And I'm reminded a lot of the situation being similar to the apartheid in South Africa, and how it was really a movement of the people that stopped that and stopped supporting the institutions that were supporting apartheid and boycotting the corporations and the banks that were supporting apartheid. And apartheid ended. And I would very much like to see a movement like that, and sanctions. There were government sanctions by the United States against South Africa. And my question is, if the Whaling Commission can't actually enforce the regulations, wouldn't it make sense to have sanctions imposed upon these nations that are defying them?
Well, I think you've probably hit on one of the major reasons why we experience the problems we do. Yes, sanctions would be the only, it is the way to go. But the question becomes, is there the economic will to have sanctions against countries like Japan, given our relationships with Japan in other arenas? And I think that's the real problem here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're trading the lives of the whales in order to import Toyotas?
Yep.
And Priuses?
Yep, I would imagine that it's the case.
Well, I don't drive a Toyota or a Prius, so...
But But we do know how those things often work out. Yeah. It's like the corporate power, it supersedes anything.
It appears that that is what the modern world seems to be all about.
Yes, it does, sadly so. Could you talk a little bit about your research regarding the effects of sound on marine animals? That's a very, very important subject around here, too, as a blue whale was washed up, you know, not too long. Well, there are several whales that we think probably were disoriented by some sort of sonic thing happening on the boats around them.
Well, there's lots of sources of sound, but there's no question that certain sounds, certain frequencies and certain sound levels have adverse impacts on whales. Whales, hearing in whales is very important. They communicate vocally. They use their hearing very much like we use our eyes because they're in an environment where visual sensing is much less effective than auditory sensing. And so it's very important for them for breeding, for communicating, for sound, for reproduction, for socializing, for finding food, for all of their functions. And sounds can not only disorient them, they can create what are called permanent or temporary threshold shifts. Now, a temporary is when you have a loud noise that impacts you and temporarily you can't hear, but you recover from it. Permanent is when something happens to you that permanently affects your ability to hear. And there's somewhat of a relationship in the sense that enough continual temporary threshold shifts can result in permanent ear damage, and you just have to look at all the people who listen to very, very loud music who eventually become deaf when they get older. The same thing happens with whales. So we know that there are direct impacts to their hearing, but there also appears to possibly be other impacts that we are not as familiar or we haven't analyzed enough to fully understand. For example, there are certain whales that, and for whatever reason, the species escapes me there are certain types of whales that we have had a lot of experience where they've been exposed to, for example, Navy sonar, and they surface very quickly, and they appear to get the equivalent of the bends, and they die. So there's sound from sonar, there's sound from ship noise, which is a kind of a background noise that has a long-term adverse impacts and can disorient whales, and in the long run actually cause deafness. And then there's sound, for example, from seismic surveys. So we're dealing now, for example, with all of the offshore oil issues. In order to drill those wells, before they drill those wells, they have to use seismic. That is, they have to use loud sounds to determine where to drill them. And they have to do that first, and we often overlook the effect of that on the marine environment when we only look at the effects of oil spills.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sad situation. It is indeed. It is 7:33, and we're going to be... there's your dog again.
There's my dog again.
And Judy, I didn't ask you what part did your own mother or grandmother or whoever play in your growing up years that influenced you to become the woman that you are today?
My biological mother, wasn't raised by her, and I was raised by a foster mother, and I think that probably the biggest influence that she had over me in my, my becoming who I am is that she made me want to be outside a lot and away from the house. And I think, but just from a very little kid, I remember just sitting under apple trees and when I was 2 years old and being mesmerized by the light coming through the leaves and the smell of the flowers. And I've always been a child of nature. And so my strongest motherly influence was Mother Nature and Mother Earth. And I spent as much time with her as I possibly could. I grew up on a houseboat in Marin County, and we had miles and miles and miles of wetlands and marsh and waterways. And I was out there sometimes in the wintertime in the rain, just watching how everything moved and flowed, and the birds and the fish in the rivers. And I loved walking in nature and just anything that was natural. I could spend mesmerized by a little patch of moss with ants crawling around it. Hmm. And I think that one of the things in our conversation we had earlier, driving over here, Janie, I had some thoughts about that in regards to this question. And I think that activism for women is a spiritual issue. And I think because we do know that everything is one, and that the earth is our mother, and that there is one life, the earth is alive, and we are all connected, we're all her children, we're all related to each other in such a profound way, and not just as human beings, but our relationship with every living organism on the planet, and all of the processes, the biological and chemical and physical processes affect all of us. And it's just, it's this awareness, and at this time is so important for us as women to be strong, because the forces of chaos are coming down so heavily, and it's so important for us not to despair and not to become helpless and hopeless, and to join together in events like this, in the Save the Whales Again event, and to speak up for these sisters and brothers and children of the earth that can't speak for themselves. And so that's what motivates me, and that's what pretty much has motivated me through most of my life, and as an activist for the last 25 years, that's where I'm coming from.
That's beautiful, Judy. I would like to open up the phone lines now, and the telephone numbers are 937-5103. And if that doesn't work, try it, because sometimes I guess it doesn't roll over. Try 937-5973. So I know some people are probably wanting to call, so this would be a really good time. Do you want to talk about the protest?
Yeah.
A demonstration.
I would just like to make sure everybody knows that on May 23rd, through in every county in California, we are going to be demonstrating to save the whales. And this is Sarah's genius plan. And here in Mendocino, our event will be at 1 p.m. on Sunday, May 23rd. It'll be happening at Fort Bragg Town Hall at Main and Laurel Streets. And we're going to try to make this fun also. We're going to have Sarah's petition to Obama to ask him to honor his agreement to protect the whales and not kill them that he made when he was running for office.
Okay.
We're also going to have a parade and some prizes.
Okay, we have a telephone call. Good evening, you're on Women's Voices.
Hey, it's Deborah Scott calling. Thank you for this fabulous show. And
welcome.
I so echo what Judy just said. I have an idea that I hope might be helpful, and that is, as a person who belongs to the 350.org movement, I see a lot of overlap, and they have been so successful at mass organizing on a global scale. They're organizing a 10-10-10 work day, and so I just kind of want to put it out there that everyone who cares about the whales, if they have any affinity with anybody in the 350.org group, to let people in that group know, you know, just to kind of piggyback a little bit, because they have this fantastic infrastructure that's worked very well, very quickly, and I think the people who have those concerns will share these concerns if they have the information. So just a suggestion, and thank you so very much.
Do you know how to contact them?
Yeah, they have a website called 350.org. And they do regular updates on their global, and they have a wonderful slideshow if no one's ever seen it. When you're really bummed out, go watch their slideshow, because it's what people did all over the world with no resources to educate around climate change. And I think that's a good point in stressing the need for moratorium, because these creatures are all under enough stress already because of how humanity is affecting the ocean. And I think that that's a good point to return to. And I think all the people, well, I can't say that, I think most of the people in that organization would be very receptive. And they managed to create a global, you know, the largest political and environmental day of action in the history of the world in a very short period of time, and they're going to do it again on 10-10-10. So just a thought. I'll get off the line so someone else can say thank you.
Well, I will try to look them up, but I would appreciate it if you would pull them up, since you know how to get, you know about them, and if you would also notify them.
Oh, I will. And are you familiar with Bill McKibben?
No.
I am.
Oh, you are, Judy.
Yeah. There you go. So he's the originator of this with a bunch of college graduates, and it is a worldwide, Judy will tell you, and I'd be happy to let them know. And there's lots of people listening who are familiar, and I'd say if you have someone in the 350.org movement, forward this information to them. It's just an idea. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You know, this line is really kind of noisy. What were you suggesting that we could do, Sarah?
No, I was just suggesting that since I'm not familiar with it, I would really appreciate it if it was a good suggestion if she would send something to them.
Right. No, I was it's confusing. I'm asking you that the line seems to be very noisy, and you suggested, do you have another line?
I have another phone, and I can go and see if that helps. So let me get off this line and get on the other one. Okay?
Now, do I need to do anything? You'll just stay on.
No, I'm going to put this line on hold and see what happens.
All right. Thank you. Well, that sounds good. That's a wonderful idea that Deborah suggested, right?
Yeah.
There you are.
The more that we can...
Wait a minute. Are you there?
I'm there.
Wow.
Oh, what
better?
A difference.
It's a wonderful difference.
Oh, good. sorry about that.
Sorry we didn't think of that sooner. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
As to the idea of the 350 organization, I think that the more that we can interlink and cross-link and support each other in our causes, and one of the things that I found out since being the chair of the Ocean Protection Coalition here is oftentimes it's the same people that are in the same or different groups or the same groups or I think that what's really, really needed at this time and this place is for more and more people to become involved. I hope that this this disaster that's taking place in the Gulf of Mexico with this horrific environmental and economic and human, who knows how bad it's going to be, but it's just probably going to be the worst environmental catastrophe that's ever happened in our history. But I would hope that this will galvanize people to come together, that there are not nearly enough of us that are doing this work. And we need the younger people. I've been doing this for 25 years, and my energy is nothing compared to what it was 20 years ago. So come on out to our event and get involved.
We have another call. Hi, good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Yes, hi. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
I was wondering, this is Howie Seidel from Albion, and as a man, I know that the nurture principle is in both men and women, but women particularly encoded genetically and as the biological mothers of our species. And I was fascinated by the comment of organizing women, say, in reference to the whales, to be able to stand along the shores. How would you envision that could come about organizationally, even beginning, say, in America, which has the opportunity more, socially, economically, to do something like that? Yeah. I realize in the poorer countries and, you know, it's a much more difficult situation. So I'd be interested to let that concept come closer because it would be so important.
That's a very good idea. Thank you so much.
But I don't think it should be limited to women.
Well, I do think we need to have women spearheading things. Otherwise, they turn into something else.
Yes, but I think that men...
Of course, they're absolutely...
Particularly nowadays, men are not afraid to be nurturing as well.
That's right, absolutely, of course. Yeah, That's a great idea. I don't know how it would come about. I think it would come about the same way if you joined to the what is it, 510, the 310?
350. How about we just start? We just say it's going to happen, and it's going to happen at 10-10-10 as part of the Save the Planet effort, and we start with, on May 23rd, organizing for that by letting everybody know that comes to these demonstrations to save the whales, that we're going to save the whales, and we're going to save all life on the planet by having a complete paradigm shift and getting back to recognizing and acknowledging that all life is sacred and that we are dependent on the functioning of the life support systems of the planet and our mother to take care of us. It's our turn now to take care of her.
I think that's a wonderful suggestion.
Beautifully put. Beautifully put. Will you be speaking, Judy, at the event on the 23rd?
Yes, I'll be emceeing, and I'll have probably just a little short introduction, and maybe I'll put that idea forward. I think that's a great idea. And I'll probably be running around like a chicken without my head also. But
who else? Do you have someone from Greenpeace coming?
Right. We have Kason Trenor from Greenpeace is coming up from San Francisco to talk about their efforts to save the whale over the years and the state of really sad state of the whale now. I think maybe Sarah could talk about some of the latest information about what we know is happening in the decline of our own gray whale population.
Yes, part of this concern about what's taking place at the IWC deals with direct impacts to the California gray whale. Up until now, as I said, there has been a certain amount of whaling that's been taking place that's been acceptable to the IWC, and that's the scientific whaling, but also what's called subsistence whaling. And the subsistence whaling, which includes quotas on the California gray whale of 140 gray whales per year, has up until now been, those quotas are set for 5 years, and then after 5 years they are reviewed by the scientific committee of the IWC to see what the impact is on the population. Those quotas have now been linked to this other deal to legitimize commercial whaling, which is, and the quotas set for commercial whaling are set for 10 years, and the quotas on the subsistence whaling is now going to be set for 10 years rather than for 5 years. And one of our concerns about those quotas being set for 10 years is that we're concerned about the pressures on the gray whale population for the last at least 4 years. It appears that the calf counts are way down, and so we're not really sure what's happening to the population. And if you set quotas for 10 years without being able to change them if something happens due to global warming, due to all kinds of other pressures that the gray whales are facing, we think that that's irresponsible.
Yes, and the gray whale is sort of one of our totems here in Mendocino Coast because it comes very close into shore as it's making its biannual, I guess it's not biannual, it's twice a year migration back and forth. And it's one of the things that gives us the most delight and brings us together as a community. We identify with those whales, and even though we may only see their spouts out there, we know that life is going on, and we love our whales, and it's also a source of economic well-being for our community here, as we have two whale festivals, actually three now, in Kualoa also, and just getting back to our event on the 23rd, I just wanted to let people know, too, that Meg Courtney of the Fort Bragg City Council will be speaking on that issue of the importance of the gray whale to our communities here. We're also going to be featuring Antonia Lamb, who will be singing original whale songs, and Sherry Glazer will be performing a whale skit. We'll also have Heidi Dickerson is going to be making a presentation on behalf of Mike Thompson, and Ruth Valenzuela will be making a presentation on behalf of West Chesboro. And it's so good to have people all united behind this effort to save the whales.
Yes, it is. I'm going to give the phone numbers again, 937-5103. If you're out of this area, it's 707-937-5103, or out of the area, 707-937-5973, and we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Women's Voices. Hello?
Good evening.
You're on Women's Voices.
Thank you. It's not totally related, but the movie The Cove by Rick Berry.
Uh-huh.
Familiar with that?
Yes.
Yes.
It's just pretty much a tragic statement about what is happening with the Japanese fishing industry and the story of the mercury poisoning and the families that have been affected by it. Just really sum it up how badly some more regulations are necessary.
That's for sure.
Yeah, we certainly agree with you.
In fact, that movie is going to be one of the films at the Mendocino Film Festival that's happening in June.
I think it's up for an Academy Award,
is it?
As far as documentary.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Really powerful.
Is it? It will maybe move people into protesting.
Let's hope.
Well, let's hope. I understand that on our military base in Japan, they have...
Protested,
and it's not going to be allowed to be shown.
Huh.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to make a comment about something that Judith said, and that was how delighted most people are and how excited they are when they see a whale. They get so excited, and the joy that it brings to people is really, I think, something that is another reason to protect these wonderful creatures.
By the way, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night. Isn't that's so true? That whales are so much an integral part of this sea community, and I can't imagine that isn't true for every other community along the ocean as well.
And I think it's very clear, if you've ever been out on a whale watching boat, whether the people are from the coast or from inland, when they see a whale, all the screams of delight.
Yes, absolutely. And then everyone gets very quiet as we get close.
Right.
Of
course, it is have a financial effect on California, because the whale watching industry brings in money in a positive way.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, you also, I see down here when we were talking about the populations, the calf count going down, and also that dead emaciated whales are washing up on the shores.
That's what we understand, yes.
How tragic.
So there is somewhat of a cycle that takes place as a result of, the food, but we are very concerned that the effects, particularly of climate change, are going to have serious implications for the future of the gray whale.
Yeah, absolutely. Here we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Good evening, Janie and guests. This is
Thank
Zach
you.
Calling from the coast.
Hi.
And I, along with Judy, have been part of the local Ocean Protection Coalition group. And one thing I wanted to stress is that there are many, many issues around the ocean that we've been working on, wave energy and offshore oil and ocean acidification and pollution. Currently, the reinstating of the commercial whaling is one of our big issues. But I would like to extend an invitation to the public. If these are issues that, and we really need the help, we're a pretty small group right now, and if you're interested in working on some of these issues, please come and join us. And one of our problems is that, as in many of the groups that I have worked with, is I don't think any of us are under 40, and we need some of that youthful energy, because it will be up to the young people, young adults, and the children to carry on our work into the future, which may become more difficult as time goes on. One aspect of the coming event on the 23rd I would like to expand on is the contest that we're having, where we're having a contest for the best whale poster or placard, the best whale hat, best whale costume. Now, we've got some great prizes. Sarah was talking about whale watching tours. We've got some tickets for local whale watching tours on local boats out of Noyo Harbor. We've got some dinners at some of our wonderful local restaurants, gift certificates from local businesses, and others that are pending right now that I don't want to mention until it's firmed up. But we've got some great prizes here, and I'd like to invite people of all ages who are concerned about the whales and would like to participate in the contest to be part of it, but especially reach out to the young adults and to the children to come and participate, because that's so important that they get involved in these things.
That's great.
I wanted to thank you, Zach, for that, because I was going to try to slide that in there when I had a chance. And I also want to thank all of the members of the Ocean Protection Coalition for being able to hop on board this and organize this event at such short notice. And it's, I know there's so many of us are working very hard to do this, and I really, really encourage everyone that can to join us at the event on May 23rd at 1 p.m. at Fort Bragg Town Hall, and really, really consider getting involved to help save our whales locally and to help save the ocean, because the ocean is our number one life element of the life support system.
It is. And thank you, Zach. Thank you
and
so
Zach,
much.
Zach, thank you very much. And it sounds like what you've planned, and I'm learning about what's been planned here for the first time, sounds like they've been doing a wonderful job. And I would like to add my voice to Zach to saying go beyond the 23rd. And if you really care about the whales, and if you care about the ocean and the other creatures, it really requires that everybody join together. And joining the group, the Ocean Protection Council.
Coalition.
I keep saying council. I have elevated you to a state agency.
Thank
you. The coalition. I think it sounds like that's the real way to get started and to start the movement that's needed to deal with these issues. Mm-hmm.
So there's just one more event that we haven't mentioned, and this is how ambitious we are, just the little four or five or six people. We are going to have a parade. So we're hoping people will dress up in whale costumes and whale hats, and we're going to hopefully have the bull kelp trumpeteers are going to be leading the parade. And we want to really, really show our community how much we really love and care, not just about the whales, which we do, but also about the community.
Lovely. That sounds wonderful, Judy. Mm. Should be a grand event. And I expect that's happening up and down the coast.
And as I said, each group is organizing it differently, but each one of them has amazed me in terms of their desire to really get this thing going and to make it, in some cases, involve young people. And for example, we have somebody organizing Santa Monica High School to come out. But everybody's doing something different. They're expressing it in their way, and I think that's the wonderful thing about it.
It is, and I hope, as we've said before, I hope it goes on. I hope this is just a platform that can be built upon. I noticed that in reading that the Humane Society is asking Obama to shun the whaling deal.
Oh, yes. The Humane Society is definitely opposed to this.
Good for them. I mean, it's obvious, but nevertheless.
I mean, as I said, there are 40 groups. So it's the Humane Society, it's Greenpeace, it's Earth Island, it's NRDC, it's you name it. Animal
Ocean
Welfare
Protection
Institute.
Ocean Protection Coalition. Now you got me.
And
doing
the Ocean Protection Coalition. Right.
Right. Well, I just want to thank you so much, Sarah, for being our guest and speaking to the community about this really important event. Thank you.
And thank you for having me.
You're
and thank
most
you,
welcome.
Sarah, for organizing this and sharing this last hour with us.
It's my pleasure, and hopefully we'll have some happy results
yes.
In a couple of weeks.
Yes, we'll be tuned in.
thank you.
Thank you, and good night.
Bye.
Good night. I want to thank you, Judy, for being here and being part of this and contributing all the beautiful words that you have.
Thank you, Janie.
Yeah, you're welcome.